Hey there, sexy. It's another week here at Sex Gets Real. Just a couple of quick reminders before we dive into this really, really fun and just wisdom-filled chat with Allison Moon, who I adore. So first up, don't forget my anal sex 101 workshop that will be online. So no matter where you are in the world, you can join me for this 90-minute class. It's going to be on October 26th at 8 p.m. Eastern if you're in the U.S. or Canada. But don't worry if you can't attend it live or if you're in a different time zone, because registering gets you 24-hour access to the training, which means anytime in 24 hours after we do the live workshop, you are going to be able to access the training and watch it to learn all about butt stuff. So please sign up. You can do that at sexgetsreal.com/butts. I still want your voicemails. I've had several come in and it's wonderful hearing your voices. So you can leave a message for me at 747-444-1840. And if you're not in the US, so that phone number doesn't work for you, you can still record yourself and email it to me at info@sexgetsreal.com. And all you have to do is find a nice quiet location and then say, "You're listening to Sex Gets Real with Dawn Sarah." And your voice might be part of the new intro that I'm cooking up. So I want to hear from you. Sign up for the butt class. We're going to have so much fun. And here is Allison Moon. Hey everyone, Dawn Sarah here with Sex Gets Real. And I am going to fangirl for just a moment because I am so thrilled to have with me this week on the show, Allison Moon. Welcome to the show, Allison.
Thank you. Good to be here.
I talk about Girl Sex 101 so much on the show that everyone listening should be thoroughly familiar with your work. But just in case they're not, let me share a little bit about you, and then we're going to roll around in vulvas and threesomes and all kinds of goodness.
Woohoo.
Yeah, I know. For those of you who haven't already started following along with Allison's work after all of my Girl Sex 101 plugs, Allison is the author of Girl Sex 101, the erotic memoir Bad Dyke, which just recently came out in audiobook format, right?
Yes, yes.
Yes. And the Tales of the Pack series, which is about lesbian werewolves. And both books in the series, Lunatic Fringe and Hungry Ghost, were nominated for Goldie Awards for lesbian fiction. Allison also was the 2011 Lambda Literary Emerging LGBT Authors Fellow. Allison's a sex educator, which I'm sure most of you know, who has presented her workshops on strap-on sex, polyamory, sexual self-expression, erotica writing, and so much more, like vulvas, to thousands of people around the U.S. and Canada. So I think we're going to have fun today.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so I have to start here because this tweet delighted me. You just recently tweeted, "Tandem threesomes are the second best kind of threesome." And I just, like, I need to know more.
Well, I had a problem. It's like, I wasn't quite sure how to properly term the kind of threesome that I had. And it was, I am very, very lucky to be in partnership with two wonderful people. And both of them were at my home. I live with my partner, Reed, and then my other partner was visiting. And so both of them were with me last night, and then, but they're not lovers with each other. And then they were both leaving today for a series of, or for days away from me. And so it was usually the night before one of my partners leaves for a while. We obviously have sex. Mm-hmm. And but both of them were leaving, and they're not sexual with each other. And so I'm like, how do we make this work? So I talked to my one partner, and I'm like, can you like let's warm me up, and you can eat me out for a little bit, and then do you mind like tapping in my other partner when we're done? And so I'm like, well, I'll ride the clit train with you, and then I'll ride the vagina train with my other partner. And she was like, yeah, that sounds great. So. She got me nice and warmed up. She got me off. We had a really sexy time together for about a half an hour. And then she runs over to my partner's office and, like, gives him, like, the caw-caw, caw-caw. And he runs in completely naked and then takes me, you know, finishes me up. And it was so fun. And at one point, like, he calls out to the living room to be like, hey, do you want to join? Like, do you want to be a part of this second phase? And she's like, no, I'm enjoying the sounds. I'm on my laptop. And I'm like, great. Everybody felt so satisfied. And I was able to have essentially a threesome, like, I guess, maybe by the process of transitivity. So yeah, it was
that
very silly.
That's wonderful. And you're right, like, silly and playful and, like, I don't know. I just love how it all kind of worked out in this wonderful way.
Yeah, it was kind of great. Well, that's the hard part about non-monogamy is making sure that everybody feels like they're taken care of and loved, you know, in the ways that they need to be loved. And so it's like, I'm always very cautious, especially when I have them both with me, that I'm like, everybody feels like they're getting the right amount of time and the right amount of alone time. Mm-hmm. And so it was a great way of just like, okay, like, I know this is going to be silly, but at the same time, like, how can we make sure that everybody gets their needs met in a way that, you know, keeps everybody happy.
And I adore that there's just, you know, I think there's these assumptions that sex looks a certain way when there's multiple partners and everybody's sexual with each other. And if they're not, then they're like kept super separate. And so I love that you were able to work with everybody's kind of agreements and boundaries and still make it really fun. And even just the offer of like, hey, do you want to come join me? And it's like, no, you all sound sexy and I'm on my laptop. So no.
Yeah, I'm over it. Thanks. Yeah, totally.
And then you tweeted about it, which was even better.
Yeah, of course. Cause I'm like, this is great. Like, I don't think I've ever had that kind of threesome before. I'm like, this needs to be marked in time.
Yeah. So. And how fun that through all of your years with Reed and all of the different adventures that you've been on personally, that you still have this space to be having these new experiences and feel excited about them. You know, I think the fear is people are always worried, like there's this end point where they're just going to be bored. And so to have newness, no matter who you are and what kind of experience you have, is just thrilling to me.
Yeah, I feel very, very lucky to have found somebody who's I'm so compatible with. And at the same time, I think that, you know, you can get that in monogamous relationships too, where it's like, okay, like, we're going to try something new, babe. Like, let's break out the costumes, or I just bought this new thing at the sex toy store and we're going to try it out together. And you can definitely do that. I recently gave my mom a care package of a bunch of sex toys because as a sex educator, I get a bunch of sex toys to review and whatnot. And so I'm like, I had this huge stash and I'm like, you know what? I think my mom's birthday deserves this. And so I gave them to my parents. My parents have been married for over 35 years. And I'm like, you know, monogamously thrilled the entire time. And so I'm like, yeah, so this seems like a perfectly good relationship to integrate some toys into something new. See how the sensations work for you. So
I love that. It's like, here, mom, here you go.
Yep. Yeah. And I got a very, very sweetly terse email from my father saying, thank you very, very much for the toys. That's all I'm going to say. All right, Daddy. I'm so glad. Yeah.
Is it that, I can't remember the name of it. I think it's that lesbian movie, Better Than Chocolate.
Oh,
where
yeah.
Where the mom discovers the toy box.
Yes, what a great scene. And it's like, I think the whole shot is just her feet, right? Because you see her toes curl over. And, oh, so good. Yeah. What a great scene.
Oh, so amazing. Okay. So I know that Girl Sex 101 has been a big part of the work that you've been doing for the past couple of years. And it's a book that I recommend to so many people for so many different reasons, because it's just so approachable and wonderful and thorough and inclusive. And I know you recently were talking about the process of kind of crowdfunding the book at Woodhull. And one of the things that you mentioned was, as part of crowdfunding, people were kind of weighing in on what they hoped to see and what they wanted to see. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to know, as you were kind of creating Girl Sex 101, what are some of the things that got added as you started hearing from people who were interested in seeing this birthed?
Well, I think the most important part, and the part that I'm proudest of, but wasn't necessarily a natural aspect in the development of the book, was the trans inclusivity. Mm-hmm. This is as far as I know, the first book about lesbian sex that is inclusive of trans women. And I knew that I wanted it to be inclusive, but I didn't know how best to do that. And as a quasi cis woman myself, I didn't really have the knowledge of how important it would be to integrate that information throughout the book. And so, you know, a lot of people at the very beginning, because I had just announced some of the guest educators who are going to be in the book, and the list was very incomplete because I, you know, the book didn't exist yet, and I just kind of sent some emails off to some friends saying, like, hey, do you want to be in the book? And I was waiting for them to get back. So I had a couple of emails out to some trans women, but none of them responded to me. So when I went live with the crowdfund, I got a couple of emails right away from some people saying, like, hey, if this isn't trans inclusive, this is bullshit, essentially. Mm-hmm. And it was very intense because some people were very calm, compassionate, and kind in the way that they language things. And some people were very, very aggressive. And I think that both of those tactics were perfectly legitimate. It was just mm-hmm. definitely like, oh, gosh, this book doesn't even exist yet. And people are already telling me that it's bad. And so that was a fascinating experience for me to kind of like really sit with the emotions that were happening in sex ed, that maybe conversations that I wasn't privy to about how certain people feel disenfranchised by just the languaging that we use in sex education in general. Mm-hmm. So it allowed me to really spend some time figuring out not only what information to include, but in what best way to include that information. Mm-hmm. And in that, and this is one of the things that Toby Hillmeyer, who was one of the women who contributed to the book, said in her review of the book, because she didn't really know what she was getting into when she said she'd share some stuff with me. She didn't know what the book would look like. And as a trans woman, she was a little bit cagey about, you know, whether or not I would have handled the material well. And when she reviewed the book, as it was completed, she was so dazzled that not only was it trans-inclusive in the information it provided, but it also was integrated throughout the entirety of the text. It mm-hmm. wasn't like one chapter that said, like, oh, and here's how you deal with trans women. It was like peppered throughout the text of like, okay, so here are things you should know about anatomy and the words we use, and here are some ways to communicate your status around your sexuality or your, you know, surgical status if you feel like you want to communicate that to people, and all the way through all sorts of other kinds of aspects of, like, when we talk about, I would talk about pregnant bodies, and then I would talk about trans feminine bodies in the same areas where it's like, these are just different considerations when talking about women's bodies, mm-hmm. And all the ranges that women's bodies can take. And so for me, that was such a wonderful opportunity to have people weigh in at the beginning. And yes, it was totally scary. And at the same time, without those emails, without those people stepping forward and saying, like, Allison, you need to do it this way, please. Mm-hmm. I don't think it would have been the book that it is. It wouldn't have been nearly as good because I wouldn't have had the knowledge of how to move forward in a way that made people feel seen and appreciated. And now, like, the number one thing that I see in reviews, I have a Google alert for Girl Sex 101, and so I see it pop up on, like, Reddit and places where trans girls are talking to other trans girls about how to understand their bodies and their sexualities, how to communicate with their partners, and they're always recommending Girl Sex 101 now. And that, to me, is like a giant compliment that, like, I did something right, that I was honoring this community in a way that, you know, they had been ignored, and then finally, like, they felt like they were being seen and appreciated, and that just blows my mind.
That gave me chills. I love hearing that. That's a powerful thing.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was incredibly moving. And again, like, I think that as sex educators, there is this notion that, like, we think we know everything, or we try, you know, we're hopefully always learning. But you really need to listen to the people that you want to help. Like, we need to listen to the people who are trying to serve. If I just rehashed the same information, it wouldn't have served the people who wanted to read the book, nor would it have served just the revolution around sexuality, right? Like, mm-hmm. we need to be at the forefront. We need to be on the cutting edge. And we need to be listening to people who are fighting that fight right on the front lines in terms of being seen, being heard, and being appreciated.
Have you heard from people other information that they'd love to see as, like, a second edition to Girl Sex 101, or kind of like Girl Sex 201? Are there plans around kind of taking what is there and what's amazing and beautiful and expanding it out?
Yes. I mean, I think that there's some people have favorite topics that just weren't covered. And so I will get emails saying like, hey, could you also mention this? Or, hey, are you working on something else? Mm-hmm. So I decided to turn that into a series of, I was going to create just Girl Sex 201 as like a giant, because Girl Sex 101 is a giant book. It's like almost 400 pages. It's huge. And, you know, I love it for that reason, because it's like a kind of conversation piece. It's a coffee table book in some ways, but at the same time, like, hard on public transportation. So I decided to make a series of kind of single or dual topic books that are much smaller, much more portable, much cheaper to produce, much cheaper to buy, so that I can kind of get the information out a little bit quicker. Mm-hmm. So I'm doing, right now I'm working on a book all about hooking up and group sex. And like, so basically casual sex, as you, one might call it. And then we're working on a couple of other books that hopefully will be like tiny, easy to digest, kind of like the Penguin Reader of girl sex, where you can get the information that you need, in a easy to digest format. So that's definitely something I'm working on. And yeah, there were some omissions that were completely accidental in the book because I just didn't have room, and some that were, I wasn't really, you know, I just didn't think we're in the scope of 101, like things like, you know, ethical non-monogamy in the long term, or kink, or all these other topics. So I intend to address those in smaller topic ways. But, you know, and there are also books that, you know, people requested that I don't think are in my purview. I mean, people were asking for Boy Sex 101. They really wanted a textbook to give their teenage sons. And so that, I think, is a really great idea, but I just don't think that I'm the person to do it. So I think that there's definitely a need for sex ed that's playful, that's not shameful, that addresses pleasure and also addresses people wherever they are in their sexual journey. I think a lot of these books can be so focused on either heterosexual married couples or kind of dry, because I think sex ed, they want to legitimize the mm-hmm. world of the sex ed, because we often work in this kind of sex ghetto. So I think in order to legitimize, we also often have to have PhD and after our name, or we have to kind of approach the topics like it's dry and academic. And I'm really about like, no, like this should be fun to read, because it's, you absorb more information when you are having a good time. So I want it to keep the whimsy. I want to keep the playfulness in all of the stuff that I write, because I think that that's the best way to reach people.
That is, I think, one of the most powerful parts of Girl Sex 101 is the amazing illustrations that, is it Katie Diamond?
Yes, Katie Diamond.
Yeah, that Katie did, and just being able to go on this kind of like fictional story in each chapter that really aligns with kind of the spirit of the information. And there's so many different entry points to Girl Sex 101 that I think makes it so powerful, of like, there's facts in there, and there's stories and voices offering different opinions and different approaches. And then you have the art and the really playful drawings that make things that can be scary for people feel really easy to approach. And then, you know, this wonderful story of this road trip that goes through the book. And I think that's part of just the beauty and the power of what you created.
Thank you. Yeah, the story was, I mean, this came out of, and, you know, for better and for worse, 50 Shades of Grey changed a lot about sexuality, often for worse. But I think what was so interesting about that zeitgeist was, you know, women, for the most part, men too, but mostly women were reading porn in public. Yeah. Like, that is porn. And I love that in so many ways. So many women just started having access to a conversation and a knowledge about themselves that they might not have had before. And I realize that, and this is, as a sex educator, this is why 50 Shades of Grey is kind of disturbing, is that, like, you know, people get education from fiction. Mm-hmm. People get education from pornography. People get education from erotica. And for me, what I wanted to do was, I realized that that's a very powerful medium. And so I wanted to kind of role model how you can have a safer sex conversation in a sexy way without just me saying, like, this is how you do it. Like, I can give you the formula, but I'd also like to show you how two characters in a story can do it in a sexy way, mm-hmm. so that you can also try and integrate that better into your life with the proper context. Because so often, you know, sex education is kind of free of context. We'll say, like, oh, well, you should definitely use a condom. And we say, oh, well, you should, you know, definitely you have toys and lube around. But if we don't show you how to have that stuff available, or how to bring it up in conversation in a savvy, sexy way, then then oftentimes we're not really giving you the complete information about how to improve your sex life in those ways. So I wanted to show, like, these are characters who are, like, getting naked and getting freaky with each other. And then somebody brings up, like, oh, by the way, I've never done this before. And so, like, just showing, you know, like, that's okay to do. It's not going to derail the conversation. You can have that conversation, and you can integrate it in a way that is organic.
Is the art and the story element going to also carry into these dual topic books, or are they going to be more information based?
The books, the single topic books will have illustrations for sure. And I'm actually excited because I'm going to explore working with different illustrators. So I'm going to have probably a different illustrator for probably every book. And that's going to be fun because I just like want to explore different kinds of illustration styles. So that's one thing. And in terms of the fiction, I haven't quite decided yet. I know that, I love writing fiction. I mean, I write obviously like the two novels you mentioned in my bio, but also, I'm writing a pilot. I've written a screenplay. I'm writing a stage play now. And so for me, like, I like the exploring sexuality through story. So I think I might try and integrate it maybe in a less complete way, maybe not so much the road trip epic, maybe just a couple sexy stories here and there for people to get the right idea. I think that fiction is a great way of exploring sexuality, and I think I'd like to continue that.
So you mentioned you're writing a pilot.
Yes.
I'm curious, is that based off of your Bad Dyke stories or something else? Or
that was a good guess. Yes, absolutely. It is Bad Dyke. Bad Dyke is true sexy stories from my life. And so to create the pilot for Bad Dyke, I'm fictionalizing that. because to be perfectly honest, the hardest part about writing that first draft of the pilot was that there wasn't enough drama. Because I want to show, you know, people engaging in ethical non-monogamy, people engaging in ethical sluttery, mm-hmm. where they make, you know, they're good people and making hard choices. And I think so often television uses drama by making people make choices that hurt each other actively, kind of shitty people being mean to each other. And I really wanted to show, like, that's not how non-monogamy works so much. I mean, again, like, as a non-monogamous queer person, so much of the media that we see is just people cheating on each other and never talking to each other.
Yeah.
And that's supposed to be drama. That's supposed to be, like, the central point. I mean, so often, like, I think pretty much any sex-positive person, when they watch, like, a rom-com, you're like, this movie wouldn't exist if they just told each other the truth in the first act.
Oh, my God, you know? Yes.
Yeah, and it's just like, why are we indulging in this kind of, like, people not speaking to each other about what's going on in their lives? Like, aren't we all adults? So I think that for me, like, I wanted to show, like, this, there's a lot of complications and there's a lot of drama that can happen in non-monogamy, but it doesn't have to be people lying to each other. It can just be that we are all trying to make hard choices, but we're coming from a good, loving place. Mm-hmm. So for me, like, having to fictionalize myself and read and all the other people in my life for obvious reasons, at the same time, because I wanted to kind of explore a story that is both inspired by my life and at the same time not my life. Because there's only so much interest there. I think I'm going to have to start inventing stuff soon. So.
So I did this cool thing. My fictional self did, at least.
Yes, exactly. And I'll get to, like, waggle eyebrows and be like, was that real or was that not? You have to decide. Yeah, so that's been really fun. I just got word that it's a quarterfinalist in a competition, which is meaningless and at the same time very exciting. So yeah, I'm going to the Austin Film Festival just to kind of explore a little bit more about whether or not I want to try and pursue production of that, because I think it's definitely a worthy project. All the feedback I've gotten is that it really is like, it's progressive. I think that I'm so tired of not seeing my lifestyle reflected back at me on television. And so I'd like to see more people that make, you know, that have ethical non-monogamous relationships and that have queer lifestyles that aren't just considered, like, you know, tragic characters or salacious characters, that just sexuality is such an integral part of the human experience. And I would like to try and help address it in a mature, adult, sexy, fun, funny way, because I think that's really valid.
And I think it's so needed. I just recently was at a screening for How to Plan an Orgy in a Small Town. And I had such hopes for the movie that it would be a really sex positive, fun approach to kind of introducing orgies to, you know, a small town and the challenges that might come with that. And I ended up being pretty disappointed with a lot of it. You know, just a lot of kind of like using each other emotionally. And at one point, two cis male characters decide to have sex, and because they don't have lube, they grab some apple butter, which is horrible. And, you know, there was just like so much about it that just kind of reinforced all the Hollywood tropes about like casual sex. And, you know, the twist at the end was kind of like de-slutting the main character. And, you know, it just felt like such a failed opportunity to take these really wonderful actors from shows that I love. I mean, there were several Orphan Black characters and a character from Firefly. So like people who I totally love, and the movie was really well filmed, but then this story just fell so short because it was just kind of reiterating all of the stereotypes and the assumptions that Hollywood's already putting out. And so to have something like what you're doing actually get out there to start kind of changing that dialogue, I think that it is really progressive, and it might scare a lot of people away, but I feel like we're starting to be at a tipping point where trans characters are starting to get more airtime and things like that, where, I mean, who knows? Your pilot might be the start of some type of like revolution.
Well, one can only hope. Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. Like, it's just, you see these stereotypes reiterated again. And I was actually worried when I was like first starting to submit my pilot to have people actually like read and review it, because I was like, they're going to think like there's a pegging scene in the first act. You know, the first act of the pilot is a pegging scene. I'm like, well, I don't know how this is going to go. And everybody who gave me feedback said, like, this is exactly what people want in terms of at least writers. I mean, writers are saying, like, hey, this is, we're trying so hard to get these stories out there. And we do think that America is ready in a lot of ways. But I think, you know, the more conservative side of production companies, they're scared of alienating advertisers, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
And so it's just hard for creatives, because, like, I lived in Los Angeles. I know what people are up to. Like, I know that there are production producers and writers and directors having ethical non-monogamous relationships. It's that happening all the time. And I just wish that we could have stories that reflect it, because God knows there are plenty of people who have this experience. But again, like, you know, as a woman, I'm still combating all the stereotypes about a woman in a non-monogamous relationship with a slutty man. And just these people who kind of, they approach it from this very kind of anti-feminist perspective, or the, again, all the horrible tropes, the gay panic things, male bisexuals don't exist, or that when you calm down, you'll stop being a slut. And when you finally find love, you're not going to be interested in having sex with other people. All this stuff that is actually totally, completely false. But at the same time, that we say these stories over and over again so many times, people start to believe them, even if they feel like they're not true. How can you not, you know, start to believe the narrative when that's all you see? Yeah. And so I just want to offer alternative views around, like, hey, this can be fun, this can be interesting, this can be full of juicy story, and at the same time, these can be like legitimate choices that real adults make with each other when they're, you know, clear-eyed and happy with their choices.
Yeah. So. Well, good luck, and keep us posted.
Yeah, thanks. Hollywood, call me. Let's That's set up a meeting. Right.
If there's any agents listening. So I would love to talk really quickly about, I know one of your most popular workshops and the one that you're kind of most known for giving, and I know that you're going to be traveling and teaching it soon, but How to Drive a Vulva is definitely like an Allison Moon workshop. And, you know, I get so many questions from people here on the show who either have a lot of shame around a masturbation, or they haven't experienced orgasm and so they feel like they're broken, or they're partnered with someone who has a vulva and they feel like there's something wrong because the person they're with is having trouble either orgasming or communicating what they need. And so I think this kind of concept of like how to drive a vulva is a powerful one, because so many people still seem just so confused and lost and full of shame. And so I would love to know kind of like, what are some of your main either tips or talking points that you really love diving into when you're teaching that workshop?
diving into, no pun intended. Well, I think the first thing that I always want to impart on people is knowing what the full clitoris looks like, right? The inner clitoral structure that a lot of people, it's, again, didn't really know existed until very recently, and some people still don't know what it looks like. So understanding that the clitoris is much bigger than meets the eye, and that most of our clitorises are just embedded in our bodies, but that means that pressure can feel really good. You know, for me, like, I sleep with all genders, and there was, you know, when I was first starting to sleep with women, I had a lot of anxiety about, like, hurting my partners by touching them too hard or whatnot. And it took me, and even though I had all the same equipment, I had this notion of, like, my partners were being delicate flowers. And I had to learn that, like, actually, like, pussies are designed to take a beating, you know? So putting pressure can be a huge help. And this can mean either bearing down. This can mean squatting over the head of a large vibrator like a magic wand and using your body weight to add pressure to your whole vulva. This can also mean if you're going down on somebody, putting pressure on their vulva with your face so that when your tongue can isolate their clitoral glands, that your face provides a really strong, firm base for them to hump up against. Mm-hmm. So just in terms of sensation, getting the whole vulva involved. I think that oftentimes people, when they're, you know, faced with a vulva, they're either thinking, okay, I have to put something in the vagina or I have to do something just to the tip of the glands. Mm-hmm. And while those two things might feel really delightful to some people, I encourage people to start thinking really more holistically about the vulva, about, like, what massage can feel like, what different parts you can touch, like the inner labia and the outer labia, and how those different parts respond to touch. All of that, taking it all into account, can be a really great way to just get to know your own body and your partner's body. So that's the number one thing. And then the number two thing, I started teaching how to drive a vulva. It was called Girl Sex 101 back then, and I wanted to make it more specific about the kind of anatomy we're talking about. So I would say, at first it was just for women and who sleep with women. And then that expanded to, like, anybody who's curious about vulvas, let's talk. And the one thing that I still have to beat like a drum is for gentlemen, mostly, not all gentlemen, and certainly there are plenty of women who have a hard time with this as well, but use your hands. There's this notion that once we graduate from, like, you know, teenage groping in the back of the Cadillac, that that hands are suddenly off the table, and that now it's like once you have PV sex, penis vagina sex, or once you're having penetrative sex, that your hands just stop being useful. And I just say, like, hands will never let you down. You know, no matter how many whiskeys you've had, your hands aren't going to go soft. Yeah. So, and no matter how tired you are, or if you already had an orgasm, like, there's this idea that if a person's penis isn't working, then they can't pleasure their partner, which is just so not true. So I encourage people of all genders to really get good at using their hands, because hands can be soft, they can be hard, they can be full, they can be narrow, they can be all the things that you need to be. And they can be wonderful on the outside, they can be great on the inside of the vagina, they can be just, they can touch the clit beautifully, they can massage the thighs. I mean, hands will totally, like, help you out when the rest of your body fails. And I think, like, hand sex is just definitely, like, just always on the menu with me. Yes. Always on the menu. I'm a big, big fan.
It's just like, hand sex is just like, oh, I just, it's so amazing. Mm-hmm. And it's, you're right. It's always on the menu.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, one of my favorite things to do with my partner is, like, if he's using his penis, and I really like penetrative sex. So for mm-hmm. me, I like, you know, getting fucked. He'll, like, be using his penis, and then he'll, like, pull out and then switch to his hand, which allows him to last a lot longer, especially mm-hmm. if I'm on one of my, like, just give me everything you've got kind of drags, which amen to those. It's great because then he can last a really long time. He can use his hands. He can get me off and then go back in with his penis and switch it up a lot. And it feels so fun. Keeps the energy up and at the same time, like, makes everybody feel like we're doing a good job.
Right. Which is so important. And I feel like we forget that.
Yeah, no, it's totally important. And again, like, I mean, I'm sure what your show does for listeners and what sex education ideally does is give people access to the full range of their sexuality, let people know what's really possible. And I think that, you know, part of that is to feel like we can do a good job with our lovers. We want to be of service to our lovers. We want to be good at sex, you know? And a lot of us don't really know if we are sometimes. We don't have the right feedback. Mm-hmm. So being able to kind of try different things and get that feedback and share that feedback saying, oh my God, honey, I love it when you use your hands. It allows us all to feel like, yay, we did a good job.
Yeah. And I love so much what you're saying about just pressure and hands and involving the whole vulva. I mean, I know even just in my personal experience, when I started masturbating, I felt like if I wasn't penetrating myself with something or just like zeroing in on my clit, that like it wasn't really masturbation. And it took me a really long time. I mean, into my like mid 20s that I really started figuring out like there's so many other parts of my vulva and my inner thighs and just my body that were part of my pleasure map. And I think one of the most surprising things for me was, you know, for so long, I shaved my pubic hair because, you know, like, you're supposed to, if you have pubic hair, you're kind of like that 70s Bush joke. and then I started growing my pubic hair and I found out that, holy crap, like petting and tugging on my pubic hair feels so good. You know? And so just like allowing myself to have these discoveries and not being ashamed of the fact that like we don't get that information for the most part. And so sometimes it takes reading a book or it takes a partner who's interested in doing this thing to you before you kind of realize like, holy crap, that feels really good. Maybe I should do more of that.
Oh, absolutely. And that's like self-exploration is so important. Again, like for me, I learned to masturbate very young and I was very efficient at it, which was great for me when I was, you know, had, you know, two minutes before I had to run to catch the school bus. But that wasn't great for, you know, learning to have pleasure with partners. And so once I started having partnered sex, I had to back right up and I had to start really exploring my body from the beginning again so that I could learn to receive touch and pleasure from a different person's hands. And I think that that's so valuable and just kind of like taking time to do some R&D, you know, really like research development nights where it's like either solo or with your partner to really just kind of, this is something I always recommend too for people who are particularly having a hard time connecting with their pleasure in whatever ways, taking orgasm off the table and just spending some time just touching and feeling and seeing how it works and seeing how that feels. Something I did with my female partner that I just loved was one night we were just kind of both really lazy. You know, one of those like we want to be sexual but we're tired. So we were laying next to each other and we just had our hands on each other's vulvas and I would do something and then she would do the thing that I was doing to her on me. Like at simultaneous, kind of like, oh, like I'm touching this part of your clit now. And oh, okay, you're touching this part of my clit now. And like just comparing notes, basically. We were drawing maps of each other's genitals just to get to know them. Because even though she and I have the same equipment, it works very differently. Mm-hmm. She likes to be touched so differently than I like to be touched. So this was a great information for us to kind of go back to be like, okay, like this is your body. So I'm going to explore your body as it's your body, even though, you know, you have a clit and labia. Let's talk about how you like them touched. I think that that was so valuable for me to understand my partner's body. And again, it wasn't about like, how quickly can I get her off? It was about like, oh, you like this kind of touch. Oh, that's interesting because I don't like that at all, but you really like it. Okay, great. So I'm going to remember that for next time. And okay, like let's try touching each other in a lot of different ways just to see what feels good. Even in my tandem threesome, I was like, I don't know what I want right now, but I know I want your hands on me. So like let's do a bunch of things and like I'll tell you when you've done something that I really want you to keep doing. Yeah. And it ended up being like a beautiful like introitus massage, right? Like a vaginal vestibule massage. And it was great because, you know, she put her thumbs at the opening to my vagina and kind of just pressed and rubbed and it felt super sensual, super mm-hmm. sexy. And then that combined with a vibrator and I was like, woo-hoo, this is a good night.
Oh, that sounds... And the thing is, I've met so many people who are scared to do that exploration because there's this kind of like, well, I should know what to do if I'm 30 or 40 or whatever it is. And to hear you describe it, it sounds so like delicious and intimate and fun. And I can just like feel the pleasure in my body in doing something like that with someone. And so it makes it seem so much more approachable and fun to explore each other and get to know each other versus this kind of like, well, I need to pretend like I know what I'm doing so that I seem good at sex.
Absolutely. That's the thing. Like I do this for a living and I'm still learning new things about myself and my partner's bodies. Mm-hmm. And so I think that like, there's no such thing as how you're supposed to respond to touch. Your body responds the way it responds. And your job is to just listen and be with that sensation. And that's the thing, like our bodies change over time too. Hormones for all genders, hormones affects the way touch moves through our body, the way our nerves work. So, you know, as we go through different stages in life, your body will often respond differently. So the thing that you used to love 15 years ago might not work for you anymore. And that doesn't mean you're broken, and it doesn't mean that your partner is not turning your crank like they used to. It just means that your body's responding differently, and that's okay. I mean, I think people with menstrual cycles probably know this very well, right? Because, you know, any day in a given month, your body responds differently to touch. Mm-hmm. Sometimes my cervix wants you to ram it really hard. Sometimes my cervix wants you to pretend it doesn't exist. And that's all just in the matter of a couple days, you know? So being receptive, like treating your body like the beautiful animal in some ways that it is, being tender with it, being gentle with it, and listening to it about what it needs, that will serve you so much better than any book, you know, that any amount of facts will. Just learning to listen to your body, learning to listen to your partner's body, and just being okay with whatever your body is giving you. That's just stuff that will help you through a lifetime.
I love all of that so much. I mean, yeah, it's yes. I hope all of the listeners will immediately make some time on the calendar to go do just like a delicious date with themselves.
Totally. Oh, and I learned that all the time. Again, like I still kind of like resort to like, my 30 yes. seconds, one and done.
Yep.
Which again, like it's fun for, you know, a quickie, but, you know, I still love my partner. She loves just kind of taking 45 minutes to like prod and poke and tug and figure stuff out. Mm-hmm. And I learned so much from people who do that. I learned so much about like just, yeah, listening to your body and also like trying new things, because gosh, that's just like, I think sex can be a lifelong journey, not a specific thing that you do in a specific set of ways. So yeah, like I absolutely encourage people to do like little dates with themselves, R&D nights, like, you know, turn off the phone, make sure the kids are out of the house, and spend a couple hours just mapping your own pleasure and seeing where you end up.
Yeah. And it's okay if you feel silly or embarrassed or weird while you're doing that.
Oh my God. Yes, of course.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, gosh, the faces we make when we are in pleasure, it's so great. I like, that's the thing, like the goofiness, keeping the sense of humor, like bodies are weird. And that's the thing, like for me, like I have a very practical, like I can be all like spiritual woo and like talk about like the essence of humanity and how beautiful it is. But at the same time, like bodies are weird. They make weird noises. They smell weird sometimes. And sometimes when you're like with somebody and you're sweaty and you make that fart noise, it just happens. And you know, And it's just, sex is fun for that reason. And so it's like allowing yourself to keep your sense of humor. You don't have to check your sense of humor at the door when you become sexy. It doesn't have to be like this super sacred ritual, although it certainly can be. And also humor can be sacred as well. So yeah, have fun with it. Try and make weird faces. Try and make weird noises. I always encourage people, especially people who have a hard time making noise, mm-hmm. to just make all the porno noises they possibly can. Try and scare the neighbors. Like just see what it feels like to hit those operatic notes, just to have the experience of doing it. Because mm-hmm. It breaks a seal in a certain way. It gets your body to just used to experiencing different things. And that can be just by itself incredibly liberatory, yeah. to make the weird noises or to masturbate in the weird way or the bounce on the yoga ball or whatever. You know, have fun with it.
I love that. Like, I'm going to pull out my magic wand and bounce on the yoga ball and see what happens. Why not?
Why not?
Yep. Well, something that you just said about sex being a lifelong journey, made me think this might be the perfect time to transition into a listener email that is all about like queerness and learning. And I think something that'll be really fun to roll around in with you.
Sure.
Okay. So the email is a little bit long and I'm going to read it so that everybody can be in the same place that, we are as we start talking about it. So I'm just going to jump in and then we'll see where we end up. So this email is from someone who's identified themselves as A, and it says, "Hi, Dawn. Like many listeners, I recently found your podcast and have been binge listening ever since. There is so much about which I would love to pick your brain, but I will focus on one current issue in my life and relationship. It's a long story, so here are the main points. I was raised in an extremely religious context, which included homophobia, body shame, sex shame, and an extreme lack of sex education. My religious school taught us three things: period stuff, sex is only for marriage, and you have to have sex with your husband whether you want to or not. Fast forward a few years. I went into a religious college, continued with this framework, married at the tender age of 23, neither of us having had vaginal intercourse with anyone else. And then in parentheses, in my teens, I had given, received oral with two boyfriends, which sadly resulted in extreme shame and self-hatred and even self-harm. Now, an important part of the story is that since high school, I was very aware of romantic and sexual attraction to girls. She says, I identify as a cis female, gender pronouns are she, hers, or they, them. I even joked with my high school college boyfriend that if I wasn't Christian, I'd be a huge lesbian. I fought that aspect of my identity tooth and nail. I fell in love with a cis female friend, and I had the most intense, non-physical relationship with her. We never even kissed. And then when it all became too real and I couldn't continue denying that we were just super close friends, I unintentionally broke her heart. Soon after, I married my college sweetheart, who's a straight cis male. Although it can sound like I just escaped into a haven of heteronormativity, it's also true that I was deeply in love with him too. So fast forward, I'm now a sex-positive feminist. I've walked a long way away from the faith of my past, moved from right to far left politically and ideologically, and I openly identify as queer, bi, and pan. I'm 12 years into my marriage, and I still love my husband, but have felt deeply disconnected since the birth of our child 2.5 years ago. I couldn't be more different than the woman he married, and all along the way, it has been a source of struggle as he continues to try and understand and adjust to my various iterations of self. I'm hell-bent on belonging to myself and following what my heart, mind, and soul need to thrive so I can charge ahead and expect everyone to get with the program. Anyway, with the recent sense of disconnection, I have felt more and more troubled with my lack of sexual exploration, particularly my queer sexual exploration. I brought up the concept of open relationships, which was both confusing and devastating idea for my husband. We just began couples therapy to see how to find and forge a path ahead that works for everyone. I still love him and I want to be with him. And I also love myself, finally, and I don't want to compromise on what I need. I'm just not sure what that is yet. Opening our relationship seems like a non-option since he is really not on board, and also because our connection is fractured, so it's not a strong foundation, which seems wise for couples venturing into polyamory. While I wished I had come into my sexuality earlier and not married so young, I really would have been afforded the opportunity of exploring in my 20s. And maybe I would have ended up with him anyway, but it would have been as a more fulfilled sexual being as opposed to one who had spent so much time denying my desires. So I guess if there's a question somewhere in here, it would be this. Do you have any advice on how to, one, figure out what one truly needs sexually, and two, how to find sexual fulfillment as a queer, bi, pan person in a long-term monogamous relationship with a cis male?" And then A writes a little bit more, but one thing I just want to kind of call out is that she says that she enjoys sex with her husband, but after 12 years, it's more vanilla and routine than what she's currently interested in. but that he is a sensitive, attentive lover who gives her pleasure and makes her come every time. She just bought her first vibrator, which is a game changer, and she's really trying to focus on embodiment, pleasure, curiosity, adventure, exploration, and power. So when I was sitting here trying to think of, like, who could talk about being queer and in a long-term relationship with a cis man, Allison, you popped into my head. So I know that, you know, they're monogamous, and so that's a little different. But I would love to know, just after reading the email and hearing it, I have so many thoughts, but I just kind of want to start with you and what your thoughts are after hearing this incredible journey that A has been on.
Okay. So, wow, that's a lot. Well, I mean, first of all, I just have to commend A and her husband for being so compassionate and kind throughout this whole process. That's a lot. And I think that, you know, there is a lot of regret there, and I totally hear that, and I appreciate how hard that must be. And I think it's good that, you know, that she's exploring and that he's supporting her and that they're still honoring their commitments to each other. Because I think the hard part with that is that, you know, she suggested an open relationship, he can't go there, and that she's honoring that is really key. So they're trying other things. And so what I think, I mean, in terms of the advice is that, you know, she just bought her first vibrator. That's a cool start. I think that, I guess maybe what I'm hearing is that as she's discovered a lot, she's kind of going through a renaissance. And oftentimes when we start discovering really big intrinsic things about ourselves, we can get impatient with ourselves and with the circumstances we are in. I've definitely felt this way myself. And then once you make that discovery, you just kind of want to go, you know, balls to the wall, full tilt, like, now this is me, and now I'm going to go explore real hard. And her circumstances don't allow her to do that in an ethical way. So I think what I would advise is just being as patient with yourself as you can in terms of the circumstances you're in. So playing with the toys, trying to explore sexuality in ways that make her husband feel safe and at the same time can feel invigorating to both of them. Obviously, any sort of sexual relationship will get stale over time. And while opening a relationship is definitely a way to shake up the etch-a-sketch, it's not always the best choice, especially as she mentioned that the foundation's not strong. So I think I would recommend like exploring sexuality in different ways. Maybe watching wonderful ethical porn together is a way to feel that excitement without stepping out on your relationship. Playing with different kinds of toys, playing with different kinds of experimenting of role play and dirty talk. There's so much you can do in a monogamous relationship that can help expand your senses of what you're capable of. Kink is a great thing to start exploring in a relationship as well. That can help just kind of juice things up that don't involve necessarily requiring other people. I also think that she might consider trying to find non-sexual relationships with other people who are either queer or kinky or both, just to kind of feel like she's getting her social needs met. Because what I also hear, and this is a little bit of social isolation around, like, hey, I'm all these things. I'm feminist. I'm liberal. I've discovered so much about myself, but I didn't hear a whole lot of, and my community supports me in that. Mm-hmm. Or I have social buddies. I have lesbian friends that we go out to movies with and talk about hot girls with. There are plenty of ways to have that kind of be seen in that way. Mm-hmm. Be seen, be mirrored by people who love you for who you are, that again, don't necessarily require a sexual relationship. So that's where I would really begin, fostering non-sexual relationships with people who mirror her, and at the same time, start integrating stuff into your sex life in a way that can be like, hey, honey, this is exciting. Let's try this. Or would you be okay with trying this? Again, oftentimes when we make discoveries about ourselves, we kind of like need to like, it feels very dire and very severe, like now I must do this thing. But if it can be an invitation for her husband to experience something really fun too, and see the juicy, I mean, he seems like such a wonderful giving lover. If he can be giving in the same ways around integrating toys, integrating porn, integrating costumes or whatnot into the sex life, that can really feed the lustiness for each other as well.
All of that is so amazing. I took so many notes because I was like, oh my God, yes, and yes, and yes. I especially love getting the non-sexual queer community and visibility. And I think that's something that we overlook and or devalue a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we tend to kind of put sexual intimate relationships at the top of the priority list. And we often forget that we can have so much about ourselves and so many of our needs met from our various types of friendships and communities and meetups and networks that we have. And that can be such a way to feel visible, mm-hmm. Especially, you know, and I think that this is just kind of a lifelong struggle for anyone who's queer or bisexual in that, you know, how you identify is not necessarily defined, unless you want it to be, by the person that you're sleeping with or partnered with.
Right.
And, you know, if all the times that I was partnered with a woman or with my trans partner, you know, the outside world perceived me in a certain way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now my partner is a cis man. And so the world perceives me in a very certain way. And it can feel like my queer identity is becoming very invisible because people aren't seeing it and kind of recognizing that in me. So I get those needs met from my friends and my community. And I really hope that A, like you suggested, can find that too. And that like, she can be super queer and bi and pan and like roll around in that identity and honor it. And also be in this monogamous relationship with her cis male husband. And they're not like mutually exclusive.
Absolutely. That, I mean, that's the hugest part about bi invisibility and queer invisibility in our society right now is we tend to kind of label people based on the relationship that they are in at that moment, mm-hmm. or, you know, what kind of life experience they've had. And I think that, you know, sexual orientation is an intrinsic feeling. It doesn't require activity to affirm. But yes, absolutely. I think that these friends, I mean, queer is not just the kind of sex you have. Mm-hmm. Queer is about who you are as a person and how you move through the world. And that's why I think, yeah, like being the LGBT communities are so valuable to people is because they affirm our identities as holistic individuals, not just as like the kind of sex we like to have. And yeah, finding friends that affirm that about you, that see you for who you are, either including and in spite of the relationship that you have with your partner, is so huge. And I think that that can go a really long way in making you feel like you are seen and valued as a person.
I know that I have had kind of a crisis of identity. Interestingly, I had it when I had been identifying as a lesbian for about 13 years. Mm. And then I started realizing, like, I'm really attracted to cis guys and I really want to be having sex with cis guys. And I had this, like, massive, oh my God, I'm going to lose my lesbian community. I'm going to lose my lesbian friends. They're going to take my lesbian card away. And of course, none of that was true. But, you know, that was kind of the crisis that I had. Have you had similar experiences of?
Oh, amen, like, sister. Yeah, no, I was a lesbian too. So I was a lesbian identified person. And I fell in love with this guy. Hello, it happens. Yeah, and I had all the same fears you did. And because those things actually do happen sometimes. I've known women who've been thrown out of their communities for falling in love with men. Yes, the people of all identities police those identities fairly strongly. And it's terrible what people do to each other who, you know, people who you once considered family because you feel like they stepped outside of some boundary. I don't know. I have no very few lesbian identified women or queer identified women who haven't had some experience of that in their own communities. So I think the one thing that I've learned and the one thing that I try and impart on people is that sexuality is not a fixed thing. And the words we have to describe sexuality are fallible. They are weak compared to the multiplicity of the human experience. I didn't think I would fall in love with a cis man, and then I did. And I had the choice to either pursue this relationship with a man and possibly risk friendships that, you know, with people who I suppose were fickle in the long run, or, just deny this relationship and stay in my identity, which felt safe. And I chose love. And I chose partnership. And that partner has been, and I have been together for 10 years. And I am blissfully happy. And I don't like to imagine my life if I hadn't chosen that path. So, you know, even the friends who were kind of wary about it, the friends who kind of gave me crap about it, they came around because they saw how happy I was and they saw how happy he made me. And they saw that it didn't change who I was as a person, that I still was their wonderful queer friend. I just happened to be sleeping with somebody with a penis. Mm-hmm. And that was a hugely valuable experience for both me and for my community. Ever since then, I've had people come up to me, like at lesbian bars, kind of like furtively speaking, like, oh, so I just want you to know that I was married to a man for 10 years and I still really love him. And they would confess this to me as though I was a priest. Yeah. And I'm like, I can't believe that this isn't stuff that we can talk about with our friends and our sisters, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think everybody's got that kind of closet around them, regardless of what your identity is, because we all have this notion that we need to protect a community. And sometimes we have to lie to ourselves or lie to our communities, or at least kind of omit certain things about ourselves in order to preserve that story. And I understand it. I get it. And at the same time, I don't think that's fair to anybody because, again, the English language just isn't strong enough to describe sexuality. We use the best words we have at the time we have them. And we're living through that era now. And as we see, like, you know, people get exasperated with the notion of like coming out with these new words, oh, genderqueer, genderfuck, agender, all these things that people pretend that didn't exist before. They didn't happen before. They certainly happened. We just didn't have ways to describe them. Mm-hmm. And we're coming up with new ways to describe these things all the time. And we're going to get better at it as time goes on, as we start to understand the nuance of the human experience. We will get better at describing things, but we're doing the best we can with a faulty system. Like, we don't have a good gender neutral pronoun, singular pronoun, in English. Other languages do. Yeah. And so we're just kind of doing the best that we can as we figure it all out. So the thing that I counsel people is just have compassion for yourself and have compassion for your community. We're all just doing the best we can with the language that we've got. And we're trying to describe ourselves in the ways that we can. And sometimes we'll find a word that nails it and we'll say, this is me, this is who I'm going to be forever and ever. But oftentimes we do what we can with the words we have. And then as we change, as we grow, because we are human beings and we change and grow, some of those words will just stop fitting as well. They'll stop fitting. Like, we used to love that pair of jeans, but they just don't fit the same way anymore. So we have to get new jeans.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with us. There's nothing wrong with the jeans. They're just not our jeans anymore.
Yeah.
So find a new word or find a new set of words or just let go of certain things and have compassion to do that for yourself and for your communities. Mm-hmm. And then you will find that your community will get better at it as well. I love being introduced to an idea that challenges me because it reminds me that, again, these are all just things that shift and change over time. Love relationships change. Our sense of self changes. Context is incredibly huge. So yes, you fall in love with somebody and that person transitions their gender. What does that make you? Giant question mark, right? You're the same person, but your partner has changed. Now the world sees you differently. That's a fascinating, beautiful thing if you allow it to be beautiful. Mm-hmm. But that's the thing. The only constant in the human experience is change. So embracing that change is kind of the biggest work we have to do as sexual, sensual human beings.
I love what you just said about embracing that, because I think that speaks, you know, the idea of being partnered, let's say, with a cis man for 10 years, and then he comes out and says, actually, I think that I'm trans and I want to start embracing my identity as a woman and I want to use female pronouns, and how now the world's going to perceive you as a lesbian couple. Mm-hmm. And kind of applying that same approach to A's question around being in this monogamous relationship with a cis male, of now that you've come into this queer identity, how can you use those new urges and those new fantasies and those new words and labels to get really playful and creative in all of the ways that you can explore these facets of yourself with your husband?
Mm-hmm.
And what kind of permission does that grant? And, you know, would he be willing to go on a journey with you to try watching lots of different types of queer porn and finding out which ones turn you on the most and which ones turn both of you on, and, you know, like getting a subscription to Crash Pad or something like that. And yeah, and getting some kinky yes, no, maybe lists and seeing both what you're interested in and what your husband might be willing to explore with you now, and leaving room for him to change too, even if he's not interested in doing something now. You know, in 4 or 5 months, he might circle back and say, you know, that kinky stuff you were talking about, maybe I am interested in it.
Absolutely. And again, like in partnership, oftentimes, again, somebody changes or they discover something new and they really want to move quickly. And it doesn't give the partner a lot of time to adjust to this new information. And I'm not sure of A's timeline here, but I do think that, like, okay, like, husband sounds like a great guy, but he just needs some time to adjust to a lot of new information. And they also have a 2.5-year-old. So it's like, there's a lot going on in their lives. And I think that there's probably room for, you know, exploring new things, maybe non-monogamy at some point. But I think, you know, I've known so many people in this kind, and this is the thing, like, A's story is not that rare. I've heard a lot of stories like that. And I know a lot of people in non-monogamous communities who kind of have the similar thing. Like, the woman decides or realizes that she's bi, really, really missed out on things that she should, you know, things she should have experienced younger. And her husband is holding space for her to go on this journey. And I've seen some of them who do open up their relationship, and then the guy takes to it really well because he realizes how fun it is too. And there's a lot of room for expansion there. But I think A's right. You know, you have to have a really solid foundation to feel safe to do that, so that as new information and sometimes new people come into the equation, you can have a sense of what your marriage is, how your commitment to each other looks, and what your commitments to each other really are, so that then you can have much more fun exploring those things. I mean, I think oftentimes after, you know, porn or introducing other things to the relationship, I know a lot of couples will go to sex parties as a monogamous couple just to watch, just to see what other people are up to, because it helps take some of the scary stuff away. It helps you just see, like, oh, these are normal human beings. Oh, that's the librarian. You know, like, all this stuff. You're like, oh, hey.
Right.
It can be really nice to see that in real life and to feel those feelings, to get aroused with your partner about otherness, about other bodies, and at the same time still channel that sexual energy towards each other. That can help people feel a lot safer in sexual spaces, in the exploration process. And that's, you know, if you have one partner who's more conservative than the other, that's a really great way of doing that too, of kind of just like showing that, like, the love relationship is still, your monogamous love relationship is still primary in your lives. At the same time, this is a way you can serve the relationship and serve your individual identities.
Yeah. And I think another option too, when you're kind of in this place of wanting to explore and you're kind of trying to figure out what some of your common ground is, going to workshops can be really powerful. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're near a city where, like, you, Allison, are touring and they can do the How to Drive a Volvo workshop, or there's a lot of educators who have some of their sex workshops online, so you can do it from the safety of your home. You know, being able to create shared language and ask each other questions about sexy things that maybe aren't exactly about your sex life, so it feels a little less charged, can be a really powerful way to also start going on this journey, but the stakes are a little lower.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Yeah, workshops are wonderful. I put all my workshops online at girlsex101.com/events. So if you want to see me live at any of the big cities that I'm going to be in, I'm coming to Austin, New York, Boston, all these places throughout the end of the year. And yes, absolutely. Like, I think, you know, Pure Pleasure is a sex toy store in Santa Cruz, and they have How to Drive a Volvo. One of the earlier versions of How to Drive a Volvo, they have that online as a workshop. You can buy it and just watch it from your own home. And yes, absolutely. A lot of sex educators do that. So you can get that sense. I also have a series of free videos on YouTube. So if you just look for Girl Sex 101, Allison Moon, on YouTube, I have a whole series of just, like, you know, 4-minute videos that talk about different aspects of sex. I think normalizing the conversation is key. And that's, I mean, when a lot of us grew up in very shameful environments, And so the hardest part for a lot of us is to just have the conversation without the anxiety that comes along with it. Mm-hmm. The conversation can often be like, hey, can we use lube? It doesn't even have to be like, hey, can we have an open relationship? It's just like bringing things up in the moment, talking about what our bodies need, talking about, hey, can you put your thumbs in that place? That feels really good. That's so hard for so many of us. Mm-hmm. And again, like I do this for a living and I still have a hard time speaking up during sex sometimes. If you can practice that, practice having the conversation so that it doesn't feel like a heart attack every time something new comes into your world. So that you can say like, honey, like I would really like to check out this porn and I'd like to do it with you. Does that sound fun? Mm-hmm. It can be an invitation to an exciting thing rather than a BTWs, I have cancer kind of conversation.
Right.
So yeah, talk about it in a way that's like, this is a fun thing to do together. This is an exciting journey that I'm on. Oh my God, I'm just discovering this new stuff. How fun. And that can be, and then it can feel a lot more safe for your partner to be on that ride with you because they can see that it is an exhilarating, exalting experience as opposed to a dire one.
Yeah. Yeah. There's this part of me that's getting like super excited at the thought of like, A, going to her husband and saying something like, I would really love to find a way to explore my queer fantasies, but with you. So can we watch a couple of different like queer erotic films or queer porn and then kind of talk about like which parts I liked best and maybe we can try and recreate it together.
Ooh,
you know
yeah.
what I mean? Like just the thought of that's making me like, ooh, that would be so sexy.
Oh yeah, totally. Oh my God, right? I mean, that's something like I'm still very queer and I'm partnered to a cis man and he and I have a lot of really queer sex. Mm-hmm. So it's like, here I am, cis woman, here he is, cis man, and we have queer sex. And I think queer is often a state of mind and it can also be fun things you can do. Like strap-on sex is one of my favorite things to do. And I will do that with pretty much anybody who asks.
If you stand still long enough.
So for me, it's like, you know, being partnered to a man who likes to be pegged is like giant for me. And it feels like it really so scratches an itch, so to speak, because I love being able to have a strap on. I love being able to have a penis on my body and use that penis to give my partner pleasure. It's super queer and super fun. And at the same time, like I know plenty of monogamous hetero couples who enjoy that kind of stuff too. Mm-hmm. So that is definitely a fun thing to explore, exploring all the different kinds of permutations of your bodies. You don't have to be partnered to somebody of your same gender to be able to experience the range of your queer identity. There's a lot of different fun ways to do it.
Yeah, like getting Girl Sex 101 and trying a whole bunch of the stuff with your husband. You
totally,
know?
Yeah. Well, that's a fun thing. I've actually gotten some really fun feedback because I do talk about like what things you can do with like a soft penis, right? In Girl Sex 101. And I've had people kind of flip through the books. They're like, I thought this was about women. I'm like, it is. Isn't that interesting?
Right.
But yeah, I mean, a lot of the stuff that I talk about in terms of what you can do with a trans clit or, you know, soft penis is stuff that I've done with my partner. Because it feels good for people with penises. It doesn't really matter what their gender identity is. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of fun stuff you can do that can feel very queer. Like I really love, what I consider like eating my male partner out. And that's really mostly about like burying my face in his scrotum in a way that feels good for him too. Because it feels like labia on my face. It feels like all the things sensation-wise that I love about cunnilingus. And so that can feel really delightful and delicious too. And again, it feels like, you know, an aspect of my sexuality that is so intrinsic to me that I can still enjoy with my male partner.
That felt so good to just like talk through it. Now I'm all like super excited.
I have faith in you, A. You're gonna be fine.
I agree. I hope that you go on this great, big, massive, delicious adventure and you report back on how things are going and what you've discovered and the places that you've gone to affirm your queer identity.
Damn straight or damn queer.
That's right. Damn sideways. No. So we are well past our hour and I want to respect your time, Allison. So I would love it if you could share with all our listeners how they can follow along with the work that you're doing and stay in touch and see what you're up to on social media.
Yeah, so I'm on girlsex101.com is my website. You can find me there blogging, and all my dates for various live events are there, and you can also purchase the book there. If you buy the book through girlsex101.com, I'll send it to you with my signature and a sticker, but you can also buy it at Amazon or any of the bookstores, sex toy stores that you might like. I'm on Twitter at HeyAllieMoon, that's A-L-L-I-E, Moon. And also GirlSex101 on Twitter, YouTube, Allison Moon, pretty much anywhere you want to go. And I have a bunch of my stories. I also have Bad Dyke, the audiobook that I narrate. That's on Amazon as well. So, and I'm always welcome. I always welcome people to email me. I'm at info@girlsex101.com. So if you have questions, if you want to see me do a video, if you want me to come to your city and you can help me make that work. I also love doing university gigs. And so I'm teaching at the University of Houston coming up. I'm going to be in Tennessee in the springtime. So if you are an administrator or if you are a university student and you'd like to bring me out, I love teaching at universities. I think that's so important to do. So I'm always available. I'm always curious about what people are up to, and I'd love to hear from you.
Yay! Well, I will have all of your links on sexgetsreal.com for this episode. And of course, people can go to sexgetsreal.com and also submit questions and stories anonymously if you'd like to, so that we can dig in on future episodes to delicious things like A's story and question. So I would love to just thank you, Allison, for coming on the show and sharing your stories and your wisdom. I had so much fun.
Thank you, Don, for inviting me. I had a really good time too.
Good. And thank you to our listeners for joining us this week. Check out Allison Moon's links, and I will talk to you soon. Bye.